on, everybody. Repeat after me. Work smarter, not harder. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry. This here electronic engineering podcast brought to you by EEJournal.com and written, produced, and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. Yes, we are talking about working smarter, not harder this week. A little later on, Niku Penisuata from NXP joins me to discuss the what, why, and how of optimized software pipelines. But before we bring in Niku, it's time for a little news you may have missed. So in the past couple years, I've been a bit obsessed with how we can teach robots to learn and think, well, more like us. I blame the sheer number of times I watched Terminator 2 as a kid, and many times. So, a recent research study coming out of Northwestern University and the University of Hong Kong may have developed a computing device that is capable of learning by association, and just like the human brain, is also able to simultaneously process and store information. In addition, the transistor at the heart of this new device can also build on memories over time, just like the synapses of your brain. Northwestern University's Jonathan Rivney, a senior author of this study, explains it like this. He says, "Although the modern computer is outstanding, the human brain can easily outperform it in some complex and unstructured tasks, such as pattern recognition, motor control, and multisensory integration. This is thanks to the plasticity of the synapse, which is a basic building block of the brain's computational power. These synapses enable the brain to work in a highly parallel, fault-tolerant, and energy-efficient manner. In our work, we demonstrate an organic plastic transistor that mimics key functions of a biological synapse." All right. Super cool, right? And yes, I hear you loud and clear, my electronic engineering audience. How is this different from a memristor? Okay, valid point. Memory resistors or memristors are able to do combined processing and memory function. But in general, their switching ability is quite energy consuming and are definitely less biocompatible than this new synaptic transistor created by these teams at Northwestern and the University of Hong Kong. In their associated research paper, Jonathan Rivney explains it like this, saying, "Even high-performing organic electrochemical synapt transistors require the right operation to be decoupled from the read operation. So if you want to retain memory, you have to disconnect it from the write process, which can further complicate integration into circuits or systems." Okay, so what are we really talking about here? How does this new synaptic transistor actually work? Well, the key is trapped ions. Okay, so with a brain synapse, neurons can transmit signals to other neurons by using neurotransmitters. With that idea in mind, this team created a conductive plastic material within the organic electrochemical transistor that can trap ions. And these ions behave very closely to those neurotransmitters in our brains. They create an artificial synapse by sending signals between terminals. Because these trapped ions are retaining stored data, the transistor can remember previous activities, thus developing the same kind of long-term plasticity that is present within our own brains. The results are quite promising. They showed that their device could replicate this kind of associative learning when they are connecting single-synapt transistors to a neuromorphic circuit. They also integrated light and pressure sensors into that circuit and then trained the circuit to associate those two different unrelated physical inputs, the pressure and light, with one another. So, with that neuromorphic circuit, this team of researchers activated the voltage by applying pressure with a finger. In order to condition the circuit to associate light with that pressure, they first applied pulsed light from an LED and then immediately applied pressure. And guess what? The device detected both of the inputs. So this circuit was able to make an initial connection between the pressure and the light after only one training cycle. After five more cycles, this circuit was able to associate light with pressure without issue. Light alone, on the other hand, triggered a signal or an unconditioned response. Okay, so way at the beginning of this story, I mentioned biocompatibility. So this new device is even cooler because the circuit is actually made from soft polymers, which can be created on flexible sheets and easily integrated into smart robotics, wearable electronics, and implantable devices that directly interface with living tissue or even the brain. Jonathan Rivne sums up their new device like this. He says, "While our application is a proof of concept, our proposed circuit can be further extended to include more sensory inputs and integrated with other electronics to enable on-site, low-power computation. Because it is compatible with biological environments, the device can directly interface with living tissue, which is critical for next-generation bioelectronics." Super cool, right? So, if you want even more information about this new brain-like computing device, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page on eejournal.com. All right, it's time to bring in Niku from NXP to talk about optimized software pipelines. Hi, Niku. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, Amelia, pleasure being here.
Okay, so we're talking about optimized software pipelines today. But Niku, before we get started, can you set the stage for me? Why do we want to optimize our software pipelines?
We started looking at optimized software pipelines in the larger context of addressing machine learning applications at the edge, on application processors, crossovers, and MCUs, where this topic is becoming increasingly relevant. As machine learning moves from the cloud to the edge, there are a number of elements that we need to be aware of. So first of all, edge devices will always have various constraints versus cloud-based processing. So most frequently noted are compute power, usable memory, and available power envelope to run your application. Edge devices will also tend to have a higher inherent complexity. So we are typically facing heterogeneous devices with multiple types of compute engines. We have multiple interfaces. In some cases, we are also in a position where we need to use specialized development frameworks. And all of this sounds quite complex and is generally a true fact that embedded development has specific challenges versus developing desktop or cloud applications. And machine learning is not different in this regard. But taking a closer look at ML applications at the edge, what do we observe? First of all, while we tend to think about ML applications as one model deployed on one processing engine with an input and a decision output, in many cases, and especially this is true for real usable applications, we have complex input and output interfaces to manage. We have processing that is executed in multiple steps. We have specific machine learning models deployed for different processing steps. And this can easily be associated with a more generic processing pipeline. The second observation is that if you look at the most capable devices available today for the embedded markets, we have heterogeneous architectures with multiple different compute engines. And typically what we want to do is to extract the full performance of the SoC. And this needs to take us from mapping the processing stages to the available compute engine. And this in the end means running different, sometimes inference engines on these compute engines. Last but not least, a lot of performance and energy is spent moving data around, converting between various formats. And data movement and unnecessary transformations need to be minimized. So all of the above leads to viewing the entire application as a pipeline with multiple stages using various processing engines, some running ML inference engines, some sometimes doing more traditional processing. And taking this a bit further, software needs to enable all of the above with flexible solutions for inference frameworks, tailored for running on the target compute engines, optimized input interfaces management, compatible data formats, and minimal data movement. So that's pretty much what this is all about.
So what kind of benefits do you really see coming into play here?
I'd like to start by saying that at NXP, we see massive potential for machine learning at the edge. Not only we expect that it can provide solutions to new applications that we see coming in the IoT space, so smart touchless interfaces, for example, are a very hot subject right now, given the unfortunate COVID pandemic. But it's also a very interesting approach versus machine learning and inference in the cloud, given the fact that we no longer need to send all the data we captured at the edge. And this has a lot of benefits, actually. So first of all, and most obvious, due to the improved user experience, it's a lower latency. But we can also think about the lower cost. And very importantly, and especially enforced by legislation recently, better privacy and better user data protection and control. Because in most of the cases, we can send the metadata, or worst case, we can find solutions to anonymize data that we send to cloud if we need to. So given all these benefits we expect from doing ML at the edge, what we really want to do is to help our customers realize the full potential this has. And this is what we hope we will be able to do with optimized software pipelines. With this, we are making it easier for our customers to develop and deploy ML applications on our devices targeting the edge, enabling easy utilization of the increased higher compute capacity with our SoCs, facilitating lower power processing, makes feasible the deployment of new applications at the edge, and doing this more efficiently, including from a system cost perspective, which is also very, very important. Basically, we want to get as close as possible to complete input to output, fully optimized, ready to deploy, configure and grow frameworks.
Okay, so can you walk me through the different parts of this process? NXP has a solution in this space, right?
We already do have solid capabilities, in our opinion, that we provide to our customers to help them develop ML applications. So I would first mention the NXP EIQ machine learning software development environment, where we provide what we believe are all the required capabilities to develop and deploy a pretty wide range of machine learning algorithms, models, and applications on NXP devices. So EIQ software and tools come pre-integrated with our development environment, such as the MCU Expressway SDK and with our Yocto Linux BSP. And again, you find in there inference engines ready to use with our IronMX RT crossover or MCUs or IronMX application processors. And they already give you a good, solid, optimized base for running on the available hardware compute engines, such as network processing units, GPUs, besides running on the CPUs. So this is a necessary base when we talk about ML. But looking at the entire application, we also offer the major needed building blocks, such as capture drivers, network drivers and stacks, display drivers, and so on. For specific domains, we already have capable ready-to-go solutions, and voice is one such example. And where we want to go generally is from today's capabilities that, again, primarily revolve around optimized inference engines and models and tools to train and optimize the models. We want to go to easy-to-use, plug-and-play solutions for our customers that do not want to spend the time to understand every detail under the hood of their application.
So, Niku, what kind of applications do you see this kind of optimization best suited for? I would imagine that computer vision would be on the top of that list.
So, we see three major areas of interest, which we want to address with the optimized software pipelines concept. So, you're absolutely correct. Vision is one of them. Then we also look at voice and anomaly detection. We see these domains required across all the markets that we serve, with one observation that anomaly detection is primarily of interest in industrial space. Not only, but this is where we see a lot of interest for anomaly detection. As I mentioned a bit earlier, we are actually quite ahead with voice, and our immediate area of focus to take on next is vision. simply because of the market size and business opportunity we see here. Now, vision, it's a vast and very interesting subject, and it's not a new subject that the industry is trying to tackle. The industry has been working on vision for multiple decades. Prior to ML changing how vision is approached, we had what is now called a traditional vision pipeline. So basically a pipeline that is not making use of ML, and it's relying on what is being called handcrafted feature detection in the captured images. And then we have deterministic algorithms for the interpretation of the features for the output determination and decision making. Now, ML changed this, and at first, ML was used only past the handcrafted feature detection stage only. Now what we are seeing is that machine learning is deployed for feature detection also. And what we end up with ideally is deploying multiple models and using multiple inference engines to realize a machine learning-based vision pipeline. So just to be clear, we're not saying that classical vision is dead, and we believe that there is still a place for that, but we do focus right now in our business and will continue to enhance our capabilities in the ML-enabled vision pipeline space. Vision does inherently require a lot of data to be captured, processed, moved around. And the ML approach at solving vision problems, it's actually exacerbating this compared with classical vision. So generally, you do more of everything I just mentioned. And in this context, the concept we are talking about, optimized software pipelines, becomes even more important. What you will see coming in this space from NXP, on top of what we have now, are new flexible and scalable frameworks in which we offer power and performance optimized plugins, and also very importantly, power and performance analysis capabilities. Because it is extremely important that our customers can easily determine the ideal way to use our SoCs for their target application. There are, you know, a lot of cases, pretty deep and targeted analysis that needs to be performed on. What is my trade-off? Where do I run this part of the pipeline? What is the cost? What is the capability and capacity I have available on other compute engines? This all leads to an optimized way of deploying models that is facilitated by our framework. And the customers will be spending time in actually optimizing their application instead of specific customizations needed to reach their power, performance, and cost goals.
All right, Niku, it is time for your off-the-cuff question now.
Okay.
We have been locked down for a while. We haven't been traveling as much, certainly. So if there was one food you could have right now, it doesn't matter if the restaurant is closed, you need a passport to get there, it's on the other side of your state even, what would you have, Niku?
Well, I actually want to have Greek moussaka, but I'd like to have it on the island, on the Greek island where we typically spend our summer vacation, which is called Tassos. It's a less known Greek island in the north. I know some small tavernas with excellent views that can give you an excellent moussaka with a local Mythos beer, surrounded by family and friends, also very important. So I truly hope that I'll be able to do it this summer.
I hope so too. And that sounds absolutely amazing. Well, Niku, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Emilia. This was really a pleasure.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, sure, I dig it. You can follow me or us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of super fun techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by, who's that? Oh yeah, me. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, or Apple Podcasts. And don't forget, if you'd like to further support this podcast, please leave me a review and 5 stars on that platform of your choice. And hey, if you want further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology or, heck, you just want to chat, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of May 7th, 2021, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.